I muted her. This is pros and cons. Hello, everyone. My name's Evelyn. I'm one of the co-hosts of Pros and Cons. I'm also one of the co-presidents of the ESA.
And I'm Sophia, the other amazing, cool, awesome, fun co-host of Pros and Cons and of the ESA. And today we have a very special guest with us, Nicole.
Yay! I'm Nicole. I'm also in the ESA. And I'm a third-year English and film major.
That she is. So we have a segment that we do that we've done on the two episodes we've had. So we can officially call it a segment.
Yes.
Where we talk about, you know, something that we're reading, we're listening to, we're watching, we're maybe eating. I'm going to go first. My thing is a book, and Sophia's also read it or is reading it. And it's called Kiss of the Fur Queen.
Ugh.
Sophia doesn't like it. I like it. It's by Thompson Highway. It's a Bildungsroman of two Cree brothers from Manitoba. And they're just going through life. It's kind of rough for them, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
No spoilers, though. That is my current recommendation of what I have just read. Also, because I have nothing else.
My recommendation today is the original Annie. It's honestly wild. I haven't seen it in like 10 years. And it is not a kid's movie. Fun fact. But the reason I wanted to watch it is I'm in the Waterloo Concert Band and we're playing like a bunch of Annie songs. And they're so fun, like the trumpets going wah, wah, wah with like the little thing at the end of the horn. And I just needed to watch the film again, and it was really fun. Yeah. Nicole?
Okay, I'm going to recommend the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Nice. That's a good one.
Yes, I just watched it again the other day, but 10 out of 10 would recommend. It's my favorite movie. Great story, great acting, great message, you know?
Yeah.
My parents like to reference the Bueller, like that scene a lot. that's what I have to offer to
Perfect.
That. You're not recommending Booster Juice?
No.
Do you want to?
I also recommend Booster Juice. Specifically, Tropical Tornado. That's my favorite.
That's a good one.
10 out of 10. Would recommend.
I might get Booster Juice after this.
I might too.
Let's go together.
Okay.
Sophia, do you want to come?
Maybe. I mean, if I'm invited.
You're invited.
Okay.
I'm pivoting. So today we want to talk about adaptations of books to film. And so we decided on Pride and Prejudice because we all love it so much, and definitely not because it was the only book that we could all legally access two different adaptations of, because I'm scared of getting malware on my computer from illegal sites.
For sure.
So we chose to watch the 2005 Pride and Prejudice with Keira Knightley and other people that I can't remember because I don't know the names of actors. Fun fact about me. And we also decided to watch Bridget Jones's Diary, which came out in 2001, which I think I'm going to spoil what we're going to talk about. I think we all hated it.
Yeah. It's pretty awful.
Yeah. I watched it right before this. Sophia was witnessing me watch it. There was a lot of like throwing my arms up in the air, rolling my eyes.
Yep, the look of disgust.
Yeah, looks of disgust. Yep.
Understandable.
Yeah. It wasn't. Yeah. Anyways. I'll give a little summary of Pride and Prejudice to the book to refresh our memory, because I certainly didn't remember what it was about. Because the last time I read it was in first year.
For the first time.
For Lit and Love?
Yeah.
Yes. Course. And that's the first and only time I've ever read Pride and Prejudice.
Yep.
Me too. Except for the Spark Notes.
I did read the Spark Notes. So Pride and Prejudice follows the Bennet family. specifically Elizabeth Bennet, as they navigate social expectations and romantic entanglements in early 19th century England during the Georgian period. When a man who's very wealthy, has a lot of money, Mr. Bingley, moves nearby, he quickly falls for Jane Bennet. There are five Bennet sisters. I have to emphasize this. There's a lot of them. And he has a friend named Mr. Darcy, who is a Byronic hero that clashes with Elizabeth. So there's a lot of misunderstandings and revelations and scandals. Very, very like quintessentially Jane Austen.
Yeah.
They deal with issues of finance and class in Victorian England that women have to face, especially with property and inheritance, which is a very, very big theme, which I'm going to complain about in terms of Bridget Jones's Diary. And there's a lot of never telling people what they mean. Like, people have to figure things out without actually knowing everything. So that's Pride and Prejudice.
Okay, moving on to the 2005 remake of Pride and Prejudice. I would say that this adaptation is pretty true to the novel. I mean, Keira Knightley is just beautiful.
Yes.
She is so lovely to watch.
As I was watching it earlier today, I literally said to you, Mr. Darcy's so ugly, but Keira Knightley is so hot.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of sums up how I feel about it. Also, Mr. Darcy is not significantly hotter than Mr. Bingley. And in the book, it explicitly says that he is.
Yeah, Mr. Bingley is pretty scrawny in the movie.
Yeah.
Compared to Mr. Darcy. But
is me just nitpicking.
I mean, that's what we're here for. We have a lice cream over here.
I agree. It like there were direct quotes from the novel in there in the discussion. A lot of the they translate the Jane Austen style of writing over really well, where there's just like random cutaways so you don't get the full picture of things. So that translates over really well. It stays really true to it. Keira Knightley is hot.
Yeah.
I agree.
I agree as well. And I raise you Rosamund Pike, who's Jane.
I mean, all the blonde sisters look
amazing. She's so, God, I love her.
Also, all the actors are from, like, famous franchises.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, Mr. Bennet, he's
Hunger
Snow.
Games. Yeah.
So is one of the Lydia.
Yeah. I forget her name in the Hunger Games, but she's the one that, like, strips naked in the elevator and catches
Joanna. Oh, her. Okay. Yeah. I don't know actors.
And Mr. Darcy was in Deadpool recently.
Oh.
Yeah. So, like, you say, I'm not quite sure, but he's clearly not that important for me to know his name.
I don't know most actors. I know Keira Knightley.
Because she's hot.
She's hot. Yes, exactly. I do also want to say, it really does a good job of adapting it to modern audiences.
Mm-hmm.
Because Pride and Prejudice was written whenever it was written. And this was made in 2005. So, obviously, you know, people living in 19th century England, they know that women don't inherit land and money from their parents, from their father when they die. The patriarch of the family. But, you know, I was watching some people's reactions to reading the book, and they're like, why is this such a big issue? Like, I don't get it. And because they didn't know about inheritance laws, and they didn't know that women couldn't inherit things from their father, and it actually went to the closest male relative. Hence the almost incest with
Mr. Collins.
Yeah, Mr. Collins. He's like a little sleazy guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he really likes potatoes.
Okay.
He comments on the potatoes at the dining room table.
Oh, I don't remember most things.
Me either.
That's okay.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
It's true.
But the, back to the modern adaptations. All from potatoes to modern adaptations. The 2005 does a good job of explaining that. And I have a clip from it that is also, you might recognize it if you like have a TikTok sound or something. I don't know. But let's play this. Let's give this a hear.
No earthly reason why I shouldn't be as happy with him as any other.
But he's ridiculous.
Oh, hush. Not all of us can afford to be romantic. I've been offered a comfortable home and protection. There's a lot to be thankful for.
Charlotte.
I'm 27 years old. I've no money and no prospects. I'm already a burden to my parents. And I'm frightened. So don't judge me, Lizzie. Don't you dare judge me.
So.
Relatable. Yeah.
She shows, you know? If my dad dies, what am I going to do? I have no money and no prospects.
What happens if my dad gets the plague, guys? Come on.
The plague, which was definitely around in the 18th century. Maybe for like sure. Tuberculosis.
Or cholera?
Cholera.
Cholera might be it.
Yeah.
Yep.
We're
boil your water, folks.
I didn't know that was a waterborne disease.
It is. They find it in a well in like a poor district in like London or something. And then that's how they find it out because it's in the water and like apothecaries have all the water and they're not boiling the water. So like a bunch of people get sick.
That's how a bunch of babies died actually. Because parents would make formula with cholera water.
Whoa. I all learned this from the Queen Victoria BBC series.
Oh.
With whatever her first name is, Coleman. It was awesome.
Olivia.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Who's Olivia Coleman?
Wait, is she old or young?
She's kind of old.
No.
I think she's in her, like, 50s. Like, she's not old. Oh, then I don't know.
Oh, she's Nick's mom in Heartstopper.
No, the Coleman I'm talking about was on Doctor Who.
Oh, never mind. Not the same lady.
Doctor
Jenna Coleman.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
Anyways, I think she's stunning. If anybody knows what I'm talking about, you know.
I don't.
Me and it was back to the clip.
So, yeah, that's something that I think the movie does really well is adapting it for modern audiences to understand what the heck was going on back there, back then, back way back when.
I will also say I think the adaptation makes Austin's story way more romantic.
Yeah.
There's a lot more tension, like... The hands.
Yeah.
If I describe this film in one word, it would be hands, for obvious reasons. But I think that's what like amplifies it. I think for modern audiences is like the romance of like the will they, won't they.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it also does a good job of like portraying this society. Like it takes the society of like what 18th, 19th century. England, and it makes it feel modernized almost. What I'm talking about is the scenes, like the ball scenes. Like, I feel like when most people just think about, like, oh, like, you have to go to these fancy balls and, like, fine man, whatever, they're just standing there and they're just, like, dancing all fancy. But these are, like, fun and people are running around and, like, there's so much happening. I think there's one scene, one of the, like, balls, I think it's the ball when she dances with Mr. Darcy, where like the camera's just going through and it's showing all these different things, like people are having different plot moments, like Mary's on the piano and like the sisters are freaking out over soldiers and stuff, and I think it does a good job at like making that modern in the sense that it's fun and it's not just this like business thing.
It's not stuffy. It's like I want to be there.
Yeah,
I totally agree. I did not think about that when I was watching it, but no, when you said that, I'm like, yeah, I want to be at those balls. It's like the, how they have that Bridgerton ball that you can go to because...
They do.
The Bridgerton experience.
Yeah, and there's a queen.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a queen and you can like, and you meet her, you curtsy, and then you dance afterwards and you eat and you have fun, and it makes you realize that these weren't stuffy, boring things where you're just kind of trying to be, like, super proper and play around with politeness and, yeah.
Yeah, even to, like, the point of, like, Bridgerton is, like, the dance is very different from the 2005 remake, despite like being made within like the same time of like the Regency era. Like Bridgerton is very like choreographed and like mm-hmm. proper. There's a bunch of timing versus like Pride and Prejudice 2005. It feels like it's showcasing like the community of small towns in England of like, it feels very like country-esque of like, mm-hmm. there's like the wood paneling in the background and people are like linking arms and like doing little like merry dances together. And I think it's a very stark difference to what we're getting today from Bridgerton.
That, yeah. Also reminds me of the setting. The amount of like cinematic shots mm-hmm. of Mr. Darcy or Lizzie just walking in a little mm-hmm. field. I'm like, this is very pastoral for, you know, a very like a novel, not a novel, it's a film that is about kind of navigating these relationships and like social expectations. It sets them very far apart from the actual society that they exist in, compared to, you know, when they're in, I think, the house that Mr. Darcy and Mr. Bingley are in, and you have those like servants, I guess, in the powdered wig standing straight up, and the guy who announces everyone's presence. It's a very, yeah, that's also a very stark contrast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So wrapping up our discussion on Pride and Prejudice 2005, what do we rate this film?
I'm gonna go 8 out of 10.
I'm gonna go 7.5 out of 10.
Respectable number.
Yeah. I'm also going 8 out of 10.
Yes.
Nice. Let's go.
There we go. Yeah, I think overall we all pretty much we liked it. It was very true to the source material, which, yeah. you know, as English students, we're kind of critical of, and we want to see adaptations done well. And I think this one did do it fairly well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Segueing to a, let's say, very poor adaptation of Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah.
Bridget Jones's Diary.
Bridget Jones's Diary.
Womp, womp, womp.
Made in 2001. I did not even know it was a Pride and Prejudice adaptation until Sophia told me it was.
Well, it's because there was, like, the book first. So the book was a retelling. It was a book first, yeah. And so it was a book first as, like, a retelling of Pride and Prejudice. And then they made it into a movie. Mm-hmm. And the first point I'll make of it before we get into the summary is Mr. Darcy is Colin Firth in this film. And he is also Mr. Darcy in a different Pride and Prejudice retelling, which they did on purpose to further emphasize their lack of connection from the original source material, in my opinion. But anyways, that's my soapbox of the day.
Okay. Sidebar, before I get into the summary. I did ask Sophia, I'm like, what has this man been in? Like, I recognize him. And I know him from Kingsman, so seeing him in, like, a romance, like, a love interest role was very jump scare.
Well, those like, Kingsman and Bridget Jones, there's a very, like, there's, like, a 20-year, like, gap between the films.
He looks the same.
Well, he looks a lot older.
Have you not seen Mamma Mia?
That one too.
I said that first, like, and she's like, yeah. And then I went, he's also in Kingsman. He has like a cane that, like, I don't know, electrocutes people.
He's so cool.
And you were
in
like,
Kingsman.
Yes.
He's so cool in Kingsman. Anyways, Bridget Jones's Diary follows the comedic and romantic misadventures. It's not an adventure because I was frustrated the whole time of Bridget Jones, a single 30-something-year-old woman who lives in London, England. She one day decides to take control of her life by keeping a personal diary where she records like her aspirations and her thoughts and her quest for self-improvement and love. Throughout the year, she navigates her feelings for two very different men, Daniel Cleaver, boo, and Mark Darcy. Yay! The movie also becomes somewhat of a love triangle between them involving cheating, a duel that's not actually a duel, which was my favorite part of the movie.
Of course.
Self-discovery and, of course, love.
Barf. So, before we get into the meat of the conversation, what did we like about this film? Long pause.
I actually did write something. I took notes as I was watching it because that's how, like, disgusted I was with some parts. This is what I did like. I did like how you could kind of see the yearning of Mark Darcy, which is something that, like, you may not get as much in the book because it's written in this 19th century, like, subtexty way, which me in first year did not get. So I like that, like, the little glances that he has that towards Bridget was, those were the big thing for me because you could kind of see how the love was building up. And, you know, that's the beauty of different mediums, I guess, is there's something visual that you can show and have it be subtext while it's also overt for modern audiences.
Yeah, the single thing that I like is the fist fight at the end.
Oh, yeah, wait, that is my favorite part.
It's because we're on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
It was honestly, like, such a British fight scene. Like, it was kind of stupid and, like, honestly, like, pretty weak. So but that's what made it so funny.
Yeah. It's because there's, like, they are, like, two really rich guys who went to Cambridge. Of course they don't know how to fight. Like, the way that they fight is so bad. There's, like, very awkward kicking and arms going everywhere and trying to throw each other. That, and it's just not working. Yeah.
Well, there's also, like, really obvious, like, stage fighting. Like, you know that fist didn't touch his face.
Yeah.
But,
I liked the acting. Because I really like Hugh Grant. I think he's perfect.
He's such a grumpy boy.
He's such an asshole. But I think he does a good job, like, being the Wickham of this. Daniel in this. Sorry.
he did a good job of making me hate him.
He did. Yeah. I feel like I hated him more than I hate Wickham in Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, 100%.
And he really was more of, like, a cheat and an asshole.
Yeah. Like, this, like, domineering, power tripping, workplace harassment.
And, like, in the fight scene, he, like, at the beginning, he's like, let me catch my breath. And then he hits him. So it's like, he's, like, the worst. Yeah. Like, you're cheating in a fight right now.
Yeah. So. He's so hateable. And his acting does put the cherry on top for that. Beyond, like, the character just already being terrible, his acting really makes it feel like a legitimate terrible.
Yeah.
Man. Moving on to what we didn't like or hated, you know, we can use strong words here. I can go first.
For the rest of the podcast.
Something that this film is very capitalist.
Yeah.
Very neoliberal, very much, like, when Bridget's, like, actually, rewind. Why is Bridget's name Bridget?
That's my question.
Shouldn't it be Lizzie or Elizabeth or
Liz?
Why
does she have a diary? Oh, right? My God.
Also, I thought the diary would play a significantly larger role in the narrative, like, in how it was being told, not that Darcy finds her diary of her saying, I hate him, and then, like, leaves and then buys her a new diary.
And it still does nothing. Like, it adds nothing.
Yeah.
Hate the diary so much.
It serves literally, like, almost no narrative importance. Yeah.
Yep. I think if they could, like, go back, I think using it as, like, a narrative technique of, like, her narrating, like, that would be a really good
That's
way
what
to
I was
it.
Expecting.
I feel like they had such a good opportunity to take, like, Jane Austen's writing style with, like, because she's so, like, ironic and whatever. Like, she writes such a specific way. They had such a good opportunity and they just didn't use it.
Yeah. They honestly made Bridget extremely stupid.
Yeah.
That was so, like, frustrating.
How do you get this, like, stupid character from, like, the source material of Jane Austen, where she's, like, witty and smart, Like, it's just so weird how that came about.
Yeah, and, like, that was, like, obviously that was probably on purpose, because there's no way, like, you mess up that badly writing a character. But, like, Elizabeth, Lizzie, whatever, she is, like, so eloquently spoken. She is so smart. She's so intelligent. And then every time Bridget tries to interact in these, like, environments with the, like the publishing introduction is the best example of that, where she's, like, trying to interact with people. She's trying so hard to be pretending to be someone that she's not, when, you know, it's very clearly that Darcy loves her as she is, as he says to her, like, a million times.
Right from the beginning, essentially.
Yeah.
But to my point of that, it's, like, extremely capitalist. The whole, the start of the novel where she's, like, the reason, like, men don't like me is because I'm fat and I need to change my whole life and, like, I smoke and I drink heavily. When she says, I'm 136 pounds and I need to lose, like, 10 or 20 pounds, I'm, like, is 110 pounds? Like, that's insane.
That, like, is, like, 14-year-old. That is, like, what, yeah. Anywho. Yeah, no, that... I didn't hear that she's 130 pounds, but that is...
She's saying it the whole time in the diary. She's like, man, March 8th, 140 pounds. Need to lose some weight.
Oh, it's my on, like, God. It's on, like, a billboard at one point, like, in the background.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, you can tell this was made in 2001.
Yeah, like, you need to, like, lose weight to fit into, like, your low-rise skinny jeans. Like, that made me so angry.
Yeah, that was definitely a frustrating thing to see. Like, also, her just in this mode of, like, pleasing men and looking for male validation constantly, like, which underwear will please him best when I'm about to have sex with him, you know? Yeah. Will the one that hugs in my tummy so I'll get laid look better, or will the one that when I take off my pants makes me look sexy will look better? And I'm just like, girl, relax for one second. This man is sleazy.
Yeah, and when she chooses, like, the snug fitting underwear and, you know, she gets it on with whatever his name, Daniel. And he's like, what is this giant piece of fabric, like, under your dress? And he's like, haha, I'm wearing similar ones. Like, the fact that, like, he's, like, making fun of her, like, before they're going to be intimate with each other is also super icky. Anyways, she's also stupid. Like, why are you picking Daniel when there's, like, this perfectly acceptable, like, Mr. Darcy over here?
Real.
And, like, during the fight, when she, like, goes to, like, defend Daniel, for, like, oh, my gosh, like, he really hurt him. Like, ugh. He deserved to have the glass in his eyebrow. I'm sorry.
I feel like they really miss the concept of, like, him being pride and her being prejudice.
Yes.
I think that he has some pride, but, like, not really. Because he's, like, Darcy's like, oh, I can't be with you because, like, your family, whatever, whatever. And he's just like, I can't be with you because you're an idiot. Like, it really loses all the, like, pride. Like, he's not saying because he's too good for her. He's just like, you, like, suck. And she does. And she's not really, like, I guess she's kind of prejudiced because she's believing what Daniel's saying. But it's not, like, the same way that Lizzie is prejudiced in the actual novel.
Yeah.
Which I think is important considering it's the title.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
No, exactly. Even with the portrayal of Darcy, they make him, like, he's supposed to be a Byronic hero, essentially. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to be, like, this rebellious whatever man who is not. He's just awkward. He's just awkward. Like, that's all he is. He's not aloof. He's not rebellious. He's a freaking partner at a law firm. That is the opposite of rebellious. He is just awkward. Anyways, that's one of my issues.
Yeah, even, like, the love triangle. Like, this is so not a true adaptation. Like, where is her other sisters? Her name?
Yeah.
Like, she never has an interest in Mr. Wickham. And anyways, there's just this, like, huge disconnect between the two. And I think, like, we can all agree, like, we didn't really know that this was an adaptation until, like, a week ago when we were talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even the class thing. So, like, they did explain kind of the difference in class between the men and Bridget through like their work, where Daniel is essentially is her boss, and then Darcy's this rich partner at a law firm. But they don't ever really, like, the main thing in Pride and Prejudice is the fact that women have no prospects, because like women who have like no men have no prospects for the future because they don't inherit any money. And obviously it's hard to translate that over into something that's set in 2001, but if there was any way that they could have tried to like weasel something in there like that, mm-hmm. other than being like, the two men are rich and this woman is middle class, you know, anyways.
On that also, you can't be like using their jobs. Like, I feel like it works, the Bridget's job with Daniel, to show that dynamic, but Darcy's partner is a woman. Like, you can't have him being mm-hmm. equal with a woman and use that to show the class divide between women and men right now.
Yeah.
Like, it, and also, she just bothers me in general, like, that character. She does nothing. Like,
she just exists. I think she has, like, there. Two lines.
Yeah, she's, like, an asshole, and then she's gonna, like, marry Darcy and then doesn't.
And there's no, like,
she's gone.
Background to their uh-huh. relationship. Their relationship is never even really explored. She's just there, and she's boring, and she's mean. And, yeah. Like you said, with the class difference. She's also a partner at a law firm. She's also rich. She has prospects. Like, that's one of my main issues, is, like, this very central theme in the novel that's really translated over well in the 2005 adaptation is not even, like, slightly present in mm-hmm. Bridget Jones's Diary. That is one of my main issues there.
Yeah. All right, we're going to stop murdering Bridget Jones. what is our rating?
I'll go first. I will give it 3 out of 10 because I liked the fight. And part of it made me, like, feel a little bit cozy because of Darcy's yearning. And mm-hmm. that's about it.
Nicole?
I'll go 4 out of 10, which might be a little crazy. But I think there was some good parts. Like, as an adaptation, it sucks, but as a movie, it's not the worst.
Yeah.
I've seen worse, so 4.
I'm going to give it a 2. It's the weight thing. I don't know. This just, it's not a feminist film at all, which is why it gets a 2 from me. And with our ratings, that comes to the end of our film adaptation discussion. Oh, my God, discussion. I can also enunciate properly. Thank you, Mom. anyways, moving on to some questions from our Instagram followers. And for a reminder, if you follow us at ESAWLU every week on Monday, if I don't forget like I did last time, you can drop us a question that we can answer live on air. And so with that, we're going to go with our first question. From the wonderful Denny.
We love Denny.
We love him. Film Society, he needs a raise. He needs a promotion. He is just you can bleep it out later.
You should have told me. It's more work.
Anyways, Denny's question is, what's a better thought-provoking story? Long and complex, short and basic, long and basic, or short and complex?
Good question.
I can go first.
Okay.
I think short and complex. I think, 1 3-hour movies are just a little bit of a buzzkill, especially if they're complex. Like, it just takes a lot of brain power. And so I think just, like, short and confusing for a bit, that's, like, kind of avant-garde-esque. Little film artsy fartsy, I think that's enticing.
Little The Wasteland.
Oh, I was gonna say like Everything Everywhere All at Once or whatever that film's called.
I like that one.
Right? But like it's complex. It's not yeah. I wouldn't call it basic.
Is it short?
I don't think it's 3 hours.
I think it's like 2 max.
Oh, we're talking in the context of film.
Of film. Well, Denny's a film major, so I'm going film.
Oh, I was thinking in books.
And oh my gosh, short and basic for books.
No. Yeah, I'll agree with you there on short and complex. I think long and complex as well. I'm trying to think of one that...
Ulysses.
Oh, I gave up like 100 pages into that.
You got 100 pages in though?
I did. That's impressive. I didn't know what was going on. But yeah, I think like my favorite things to write essays on are like short stories or poems that tend to be a little bit longer. I like those. When it becomes long and complex and I'm trying to write something on it, I get lost in the sauce.
It's hard to like maintain it.
Yeah.
I think for movies, I agree with short and complex because I hate a long and complex movie. I hate like 2001 A Space Odyssey. Mm-hmm. I hate like, you know, I like a good like you're saying art film as long as it's short. I can't watch 3 hours of this. Like, I can't do it. For a book, I was going to say... I was going to say long and complex, but you kind of changed my opinion, Evelyn, with the poems and stuff, because I do like writing a good paper on something very specific.
Mm-hmm.
But I like a novel that has a lot going on.
Yes.
Because otherwise I get kind of bored.
I agree.
Like to The Lighthouse, maybe?
Like,
she's short and complex.
No.
I'm on that box.
I'm not a big fan of To the Lighthouse.
Fair. But like, I think that's cup of tea.
Like,
we like subplots.
But I couldn't do like Ulysses. Actually, like my goal in life, read Ulysses and understand it, of course, but not right now.
Not right now.
Yeah. So our second question is definitely not for me. What is a book or some sort of text that needs to be adapted into a movie?
I have an answer.
Give it.
The sci-fi dystopian novel, Red Rising, I would love to see it adapted into an animated either TV show, TV series, or film. That would be incredible. My dream for a lot of books is for them to be adapted into because I read a lot of sci-fi, I read a lot of fantasy, so a lot of places don't have the budgets to actually like do it well, so I'm very big on having animated adaptations that go by like chapter by chapter as an episode. I want to see that for Red Rising. I'd buy it, I would promote it everywhere.
For me, I would love for the Dr. Aphra comic series from Star Wars to be adapted either... No, I lied. I don't want it to be adapted into live action. I would love for it to be an animated form. Right now, Star Wars is lacking in animated TV shows. So, guys, listen up. Lucasfilm, where's my Dr. Aphra TV show?
They're listening to this right now.
It would be so fun. Murder bot droids, anti-hero who's like an evil kind of... Morley Gray, archaeologist in space. Like, it's so good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Mine, it already technically has an adaptation. It actually has, I think, two. But it's Salem's Lot by Stephen King, because I think it just deserves a good adaptation. Like, that, it has so much potential, and it's so upsetting that the movie sucks. Like, I think they need to do, like, what they did with It, because I argue that I think it's 2017, It is actually a really good movie. And I think they could do that with Salem's Lot if the right person was directing.
Mm. Yeah.
Very interesting. I've never read or watched either of those. Nor do I intend to, because I don't like horror thrillers.
It's also a chunky novel.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's so good. Like, it's so good. That's what I mean, like, long... Actually, that's not that complex, but, like, it's a little bit complex.
Shout out to the Vampires class.
Shout out Nemezvari.
The Dr. goat.
Nemezvari, our goat.
Yeah. And with that, we have come to the end of our third podcast.
Wow.
Let's go. It's crazy. The time flies by. Thank you, Nicole, for coming on.
Thank you,
Thanks
Nicole.
For having me.
So we will see everyone in 2 weeks, I think, with another episode where we're talking about Lit Theory?
Lit Theory and Why We Love to Hate It.
Why We Love to Hate It.
Yeah.
So we will see everyone in 2 weeks. Thank you for listening.
This is Pros and Cons.